Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I realized something today. John McCain and Sarah Palin are seriously and literally trying to destroy the country. They are trying to foment revolution. They're trying to find assassins in their crowds to kill Barack Obama. That is exactly what they're trying to do. John McCain and Sarah Palin are trying to incite people in their audiences to pick up a weapon and kill Barack Obama. John McCain and Sarah Palin are inciting violence against Obama, against our political system, against the rest of America, against the entire country. Let me say it again. Barack Obama is targeted by John McCain and Sarah Palin for murder. It's very simple, and it comes through clearly. You don't agree? Email from Juan in southern Indiana. Mike, can you imagine the unrest in this country if Congress had gone along with the idea of investing the Social Security Trust in the stock market? I think we would have seen millions of people on the streets all across the country. For sure, it would have been ugly. Every so many years, Republicans bring it up and they push hard for it. I don't think they'll mention it again for a while. Juan, southern Indiana. Yeah, they will, Juan. I'm sure McCain, if he manages to steal the office after he and his hoe have Barack assassinated, if they try to take the office that way or by stealing it, one of the first things McCain will do will be to attempt to utterly and finally and completely destroy Social Security. I think it's time we understood that McCain and Palin are both potential mass killers. They're both sociopaths. They're both crazy. They're both power mad. This flippant attitude of Sarah Palin's to disguise her just monumental ignorance is wearing thin. And to see these two having incited God knows how many potential killers out there to take a shot at Barack Obama is pretty shocking, alarming, stunning, unbelievable. They're destroying the system. Barack Obama has been targeted by John McCain and Sarah Palin for murder. They are pushing as hard as they can, the Republicans who are in control now. And for once, I'm not talking about all Republicans. I'm talking about this nut fringe that is represented by Sarah Palin and who apparently has taken over John McCain's personality, his crusting up brain, something horrifying has happened to this old man. John McCain and Sarah Palin want to see Barack Obama dead because they know that's the only way that they can get him out of the race, they can defeat him, is either to steal the election, and the margin between these two candidates is lengthening every day, or kill him. They are trying to incite somebody, anybody, in their audiences to kill Barack Obama. That's what they are doing. Now, the question is, how long is the American public going to allow this to continue? Even, it's my understanding that when there were complaints filed to the Secret Service about the shouts of kill him at a McCain-Palin rally, that the Secret Service responded by saying, well, we don't know if they were talking about Barack Obama or if it was a reference to Bill Ayers. Oh, Jesus Christ. Somebody catch me quick before I swoon. Our Secret Service has become that complicit in this? Is that a real statement? Did they really say that? According to the report I read, yeah, that's what was said. Barack Obama has been targeted by Sarah Palin and John McCain. They want him dead. They're trying to find someone, anyone in their audiences, to pick up a weapon and shoot him. You know it as well as I do. Terrible stuff. This is a letter to the editor of the Great Falls, Montana Tribune from about a month ago, written by Xuan Nguyen. Dear editor, I write this as an American citizen born in Vietnam, who was a war widow carrying my dead Vietnamese husband's child before I was 18. I write this as a person whose home was bombed when I was 14, and as a Vietnamese woman who witnessed 10-plus years of bombing of my country by men like John McCain. With that in mind, I point out that John McCain would not have been a POW at all if it were not for the war, based on lies by the American government, created in a country and against the people which were never a threat to America. Yes, McCain was abused by his captors, and yes, he acted honorably as a POW. But the people of Vietnam had every right to be furious at him and every American pilot they captured. We waited day after day, night after night, to have American bombs fall on us, waiting to be killed or have family and loved ones killed for no reason. How many lives were ended or torn apart by the bombs John McCain dropped? If he was not in prison for those 5 years, can you imagine how many more innocent lives would have ended by McCain's bombs? As a POW, Senator McCain acted honorably, but as a war widow and war survivor, mother and grandmother, McCain is not a hero to me. And I think his using his POW-hood in a misguided way to gain votes is obscene. This is from Doug. In Texas, a letter written by both North Texas Catholic bishops calls candidates who support abortion rights evil. The letter suggests that the souls of Catholics may go to hell if they vote for the wrong person. You get that? Now, this is not new. This happened 4 years ago against Kerry, when I believe it was a priest in, Kerry's Catholic, and I think a priest in, where was it, Kansas? Missouri? Someplace, who said he would refuse communion to Kerry because Kerry believed in a woman's right to privacy. That's what Roe v. Wade is about, privacy. Some of you people still wonder why religion makes me vomit blood. Three-page letter caused some churchgoers in Dallas to leave in protest when it was read from the pulpit on Sunday. Enrique McGregor, there's a name for you, was one of the people who walked out of Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Dallas midway through last Sunday service. McGregor said, quote, "This was a message that was divisive. It was not appropriate. I came to the church to hear the message of love. This was the message of hate." McGregor says about 24 others also left in protest while the priest read the letter. It was co-authored by Bishop Kevin Farrell of Dallas and Bishop Kevin Vann of Fort Worth. By the way, this is from Dallas's CBS affiliate, Channel 11. The letter, which is on both diocese websites, is intended to provide, quote, clear guidance on the proper formation of conscience concerning voting as faithful Catholics, end quote. It goes on to say, quote, "To vote for a candidate who supports the intrinsic evil of abortion or abortion rights when there is a morally acceptable alternative would be to cooperate in the evil," end quote. Some say the letter indirectly endorses McCain and is an effort to discourage Catholics from voting for Barack Obama. Some say if Barack Obama supports a woman's right to privacy and these Inquisition-like psychopaths, these bishops say if you vote for the wrong person, your eternal soul enters into the fiery pits of hell.
From this church, I think has great destiny. You guys are all a bunch of cool-looking Christians also. I just want to bless you. And
well, you just want to bless you and stuff. Yeah, we're focusing a bit on Palin tonight because this woman has been put forward by two fringe elements in this country that are extremely dangerous. They are disturbed. They're lunatics. They're very, very, very disturbed. First of all, the Christian right, the fundamentalist Christian right, and secondly, the fundamentalist political right, the neo-Nazis. And there is a deep link between the fundamentalism of the political right and the Christian right, a deep link that is historic, that goes back long before this country was even founded. That's one of the reasons the framers tried to build a wall of separation between church and state. They saw what had happened in Europe over centuries with this hideous marriage in hell and sexual intercourse between demons that produced this marriage of church and state in God knows how many European countries. So when this country was founded, it was with the attempt to keep a firewall between two definitely, I should say two forces that definitely have the potential for great evil, religion and the state. Religion and the state. Some people say it's a toss-up between the two, and some people say, well, there's, come on, Malay, you're crazy. You know, what do you mean, great evil? One of the most evil forces in the history of humankind has been the church, regardless of whether it's been the Hinduist or Buddhist or not Buddhist, Hinduism or Christianity or Islam, Judaism, the evil done to women by Judaism, I think, is historic. But I don't think Judaism ever went out to try to subjugate and conquer people and destroy devour entire cultures. I know. The Palestinian issue, but you understand what I'm saying here, and I at least I hope you do. Okay, but these twin evils of right-wing political psychopathology and right-wing religious psychopathology, a marriage like that produces evil unheard of. On a massive scale, unheard of unless you look back at history. And for you history buffs, you can find what? 10, 15, 20, 30 examples of the evil I'm talking about. Sarah Palin represents that evil. Sarah Palin and John McCain are trying to find that one psychopath in their audiences who will kill Barack Obama, who will get a high-powered scoped rifle and kill him. That's what they're pushing for now. This is what they want. And as a result of that action, there will be chaos in this country that this country can't even imagine. And then, of course, Mr. Bush can declare martial law, and then it's over. Because I don't think that people in this country will tolerate martial law. Oh, some will. Some will see it as God's will. That hideous marriage between right-wing extremist religion and right-wing extremist politics has found its nexus in Sarah Palin and, to a lesser degree, John McCain. But the two of them together, McCain and Palin, have created a force that is just astonishingly evil. They are trying to find in their audiences that one person that they can nudge over the edge, that one person who shouts, kill him, lynch him, string him up, off with his head, death to him, he's an Arab, he's a Muslim, he's a terrorist, that one person who will then act on that and assassinate Barack Obama. They're hoping that that person will hear what they've got to say and will emerge. You know that. I know that. The mainstream media knows that. Why doesn't someone stop this madness? I watched, I think it was a YouTube video today of McCain being interviewed by somebody where this crazed old man sat there and said that the words of John Lewis over the weekend were the most terrifying words he's ever heard, or the most, I forget the exact thing that McCain said, but I listened to McCain talking about, accusing Congressman Lewis of saying that McCain and Palin were segregationists like George Wallace, which is not even in the same county as to what Congressman Lewis said. McCain and Palin are hoping that in their audience, one of these audiences, you notice they only go in front of the faithful. They only go in front of the mouth breathers, the really crazed, ignorant Americans. And they're hoping that one of those people will go over the edge and kill Barack Obama. You know it. I know it. Mainstream media knows it. So why isn't someone doing something about it?
State of Alaska. Let us pray for God's will to be done here. Praying for an outpouring of God's Spirit here, that revival to be here in Alaska.
It's 25 before the hour. Richard in Miami writes, regarding Vietnam and my insistence that people involved in Vietnam were war criminals. Richard writes, I ask this not to be antagonistic, but rather to be educated. I realize the Vietnam War was a disaster and ultimately involved a lot of lying on the part of the American government. But was the United States totally the evil one? Wasn't there some aggression on the part of North Vietnam backed by China towards South Vietnam? Also, then, to the degree that John McCain wasn't a war hero, then neither was John Kerry. Show me where I'm wrong on these, please. Richard, no, Kerry was not a war hero. Kerry was as much of a war criminal as McCain. The difference, I think, is that Kerry came back from his time in Vietnam, and at the Winter Soldier Convention in 72, more or less issued his public confession about the crimes that he had been involved in. As far as your question, was the United States totally the evil one? I could turn the question back to you and ask you if you think traveling 8,000 miles across an ocean to attack a country that had been our ally in World War II, that simply wanted to be left alone, and no, China was not backing Vietnam. As a matter of fact, Vietnam had a war with China, maybe a couple historically. And subsequent to our involvement, I think the Chinese made some aggressive moves toward toward Vietnam. Vietnam and China are not allies. They were both communist countries, but they were not allies that I'm aware of. If somebody wants to correct that, go ahead. But what Vietnam was looking for was its independence. It had been colonialized by the French. It had been occupied and attempt to colonialize it, or colonize it, no, colonialize it by the Chinese. The United States moved in because of the Truman Doctrine. The Truman Doctrine said that the United States would use its military to contain Soviet expansionism or communism where it was at the end of World War II. That was the Truman Doctrine. And as a result of the Truman Doctrine, we had the war in Korea, which was allegedly or was presented to the public as a police action by the United Nations, which it was not. But to say that the 38th parallel in Korea, or the whatever the parallel, I forget what the latitude line was in Vietnam, to say that those lines drawn arbitrarily by occupiers constituted the dividing point, thereby creating two countries, North Vietnam, South Vietnam, North Korea, South Korea, is insane on the part of the U.S. or the French or the British or any of the colonial powers who did this. No matter where they did it, Southeast Asia, Southwest Asia, the Middle East, it doesn't make any difference. Where Africa, wherever these arbitrary lines were drawn in order to satisfy the colonial powers, be they Dutch or Spanish or Portuguese or French or British or American in the past 120 years, to the extent that those lines were drawn, the result was war, death, destruction, revolution. No, the United States had no business, none whatsoever, at all, on a moral or legal or ethical basis, to have attacked anything in South Korea, North Korea, South Vietnam, North Vietnam. No, absolutely not. Was the United States totally the evil one, you ask? And one word answer, yes. Hope that answers it for you, Richard. What you can do now is do your own research. Don't listen to me. I don't think it is a smart move for anyone to ever listen to a radio talk show host, I don't care what persuasion he or she is, and then say, oh, well, okay, well, that's the final word on that. The final word is whatever you do in terms of your own research. You asked, I answered. Now, get busy and do your own research. Okay? Okay. Christopher Buckley, William F. Buckley, late William F. Buckley Jr.'s son, was taken up on his resignation offer from the magazine his father founded today after reader outrage over his, Buckley's, endorsement of Barack Obama. Buckley revealed his ouster from National Review during an interview with the Austin American statesman that's in Texas, in which he discussed, among other things, his new comic novel about the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, the background, if you're not familiar, last week Buckley wrote a piece titled, Sorry, Dad, I'm Voting for Obama. And he wrote it for the DailyBeast.com. If you haven't been to that website, you need to go. DailyBeast.com. Now, in the article, he lists a number of reasons why he was just moving as quickly as he could away from John McCain, including McCain's erratic policy reversals and, most notably, his selection of Sarah Palin as his running mate. Now, of course, Christopher Buckley understands, as I do and as you do, that McCain did not pick her. She was forced on him. This was his penance for saying that the religious right, 8 years ago, he called them agents of intolerance. But when he realized that they could emasculate him, they could remove his gender-identifying body appendages very easily. They did it in 2000. And he wants to be president so bad because he thinks if he is president, his cancer won't kill him. A lot of people have that kind of magical thinking. Well, if I can be president, well, if I could be the general, well, if I can be the king, well, if I could be a movie star, well, if I could be a famous author, I will be immune from disease and poverty and death. McCain thinks this way. It is so evident. To me, anyway. Of course, maybe that's because I'm crazy. So Buckley says, enough. McCain didn't pick Palin. The religious right picked Palin. And the deal that McCain made literally with the devil, the Christian right in this country, which is a foul beast out of hell, is now coming back to eat him, McCain, alive. Every time Palin opens her mouth, she contradicts McCain now. Because it doesn't matter. Like she said, I've got nothing to lose. That's right. She doesn't. Buckley insists he's still conservative. And he says that Obama is a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. Jesus Christ. Even somebody as smart as Christopher Buckley says that Obama is a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. Oh, my God. Oh, well, let it be. However, Buckley writes that Obama has what he calls a first-class temperament that will allow him to embrace positions that might not suit his ideology. Oh, I see. Obama is a first-class liberal, but he is pretending to be a moderate conservative. So that, oh, I get it. Okay. Anyway, the resulting outrage of what Buckley wrote and what Buckley said from conservatives writing into the National Review caused so much pressure that Buckley told the magazine that he would resign his column, and it was accepted. Now, Buckley is not the only conservative who have abandoned McCain over the last 2 weeks. David Brooks at the New York Times, Kathleen Parker, who writes for National Review Online. Hello, Kathleen, you're next, baby. Heather McDonald, columnist with the Conservative City Journal, a leading urban affairs think tank and magazine. Who else? What's Charles Krauthammer has abandoned McCain. Who else? Who's the guy on Judah Stephanopoulos' show on Sundays? The right wing pundit. You know who I mean, Kathy. Who? No. Oh, well, it really doesn't matter. But so Buckley Jr. has been forced out of National Review, his father's magazine. I wonder if the National Review will write an article about how McCain and Palin are trying to get Barack Obama assassinated. They want him dead, and they are trying to incite just one psychopath, one Timothy McVeigh in the crowd. One psychopath like the one who got, we think, the one who got Bobby Kennedy. Or the one who was set up to take the fall for Martin Luther King Jr. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. But we're never gonna survive. We get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless we are a little crazy. Crazy. Yeah, the people walking through my head. One of them's got a gun to shoot the other one. And yet together they were friends at school.
Up to the flying monkey ride, It's more of Mike Malloy.
George Will. Thank you. It's 10 before the hour. Donald writes in, hi, I was stunned tonight to hear this guy in your place, Steve Malzberg on 940 WINZ in South Florida. What is going on? Last minute attempt by Clear Channel to replace the progressive show with right-wing crap before the election. I don't know, Donald. I have no idea what's going on with WINZ tonight. If they're playing Steve Malzberg, he's another one of these right-wing crazies. I don't know. Maybe I have no idea. I can't answer. I have no idea. No idea. I would imagine that this the efforts to defeat Obama range all the way from Palin wanting him murdered to and McCain acquiescing in that, all the way to radio stations saying, well, we've got to drop some of these liberals and do it quickly. I don't know what this is about. I got this email from who? From one of our listeners who happens to be it's Alexander, somewhere in Central Europe. And he sent me something from the Federal Register. I can't make a whole lot of sense about it, but it's a notice by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services is issuing this notice pursuant to section blah, 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 the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, blah, 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 to justify the emergency use of doxycycline hyclate tablets. That's Cipro. Accompanied by emergency use information contained in emergency kits for eligible United States Postal Service Cities Readiness Initiative participants and their household members in advance of a potential attack involving Bacillus anthracis, anthrax. Bacillus anthracis is a biological agent known to cause anthrax. The Secretary, Health and Human Services, provides notice of the determination of the Secretary of Homeland Security on September 23, 2008, that there is a significant potential for a domestic emergency involving a heightened risk of attack with a specified biological, chemical, radiological, or nuclear agent or agents in this case, Bacillus anthracis. Although there is no current domestic emergency involving anthrax, no current heightened risk of an anthrax attack, and no credible information indicating an imminent threat of an attack involving anthrax, the Secretary also provides notice that on the basis of such determination, he has declared an emergency justifying the authorization of emergency use of doxycycline hyclate tablets, accompanied by emergency use information subject to the terms of any authorization issued by the Food and Drug Commissioner. You know, that doesn't make sense, does it? You can check it out yourself. Go to federalregister.com. And you can check this out. I don't know. It seems to contradict itself in the space of the three or four paragraphs. There is no emergency. There is an emergency. There is no emergency. There is an emergency. What the hell is going on? Probably just, I don't know, just madness. Just absolute madness. Officials at the People's Think Tank have it on good authority that Vladimir Putin has indeed reared his head and come into the airspace of the United States of America, most specifically Alaska. Rumors abound that Putin has contacted First Dude Todd Palin to offer him and the Alaska Independence Party help in seceding from the United States. In a secret memo, Putin declared that Russia could do for Alaska what they've been able to do for South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Putin explained that the Russian people have a strong affinity for Alaska, which of course used to be Russian America. In fact, many Russians are still upset that the purchase price was a mere $7 million. Not even enough to purchase a Malibu condo, even in today's depressed real estate market. $7 million for a country awash in natural resources and methamphetamine. State and local authorities have reported that when Alaskans are now stopped for traffic violations and asked to produce their driver's licenses, they are pulling out Russian passports and declaring that state and federal laws no longer apply to them. The situation has gotten so out of control that John McCain has issued a statement declaring, "We are all Alaskans, my friend." When he was told that statement could be construed to mean that he was supporting secession, he began wandering around, waving his arms and muttering, "My friends, my friends, my friends, my friends," over and over again. Well, you knew that had to happen, right? Who else is getting away from Matthew Dowd? Add him to the growing list of senior Republican advisors who are abandoning McCain. Dowd, if you remember, he was the chief strategist for Bush's second theft of the presidency. And Dowd has said that Governor Sarah Palin's nomination was the turning point for him in McCain's slide. Dowd said, and he was referring to Joe Lieberman, quote, "They didn't allow John McCain to pick the person he wanted for vice president," end quote. Dowd went on to say, quote, "He knows in his gut he put somebody unqualified on the ballot and put the country at risk," end quote. This is another Republican who is taking a look at what McCain has done with the hoe from Wasilla. And oh, my God. Dowd also said the Palin pick, in contrast to Barack Obama's choice of Joe Biden as his running mate, showed voters which candidate was, quote, serious, end quote, about governing. Now, this assessment was issued today at the Time Warner Summit, a two-day gathering of politicos and reporters in Manhattan. Dowd also knocked McCain's strategic acumen, arguing that the campaign is, quote, very tactical and not strategic, end quote. This is reported Ari Melber, the Washington Independent. We'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. A couple of things here. An email I got a few months back from Bob. Bob at superbeans.com. Had a couple of lines from something Doug Thompson wrote, who is the publisher of Capitol Hill Blue. Doug Thompson is a kind of a left libertarian, I think. More emphasis on libertarian than on left, though. But he wrote, "President George W. Bush has signed executive orders giving him sole authority to impose martial law, suspend habeas corpus, and ignore the Posse Comitatus Act that prohibits deployment of U.S. troops in American streets. This would give him absolute dictatorial power over the government with no checks and balances," end quote. Now, we're all familiar with that. This was Doug Thompson wrote that 2 years, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And at the time, last February, when Bob wrote that, referenced that, Bob also wrote, "I think it's safe to say that Bush and the rest of his gang have made martial law easier to declare." Why? possible answer. Black folk are showing up to vote for Obama because for the first time in their lives, it looks like they might finally have someone to represent them. It doesn't make any difference whether or not that's true. They are there because he's running for president of the United States. I haven't heard that much hope and optimism ever across the board. Nothing better happened to Obama as long as the Bush regime is in power. Following Martin Luther King's assassination in 68, rioting broke out in over 120 cities. If Obama is assassinated, the exploding outrage will give Bush the perfect opportunity to pull the martial law trigger. And a Muslim patsy would be icing on their cake. And Bob wrote that back in February. And he adds, today, he adds the following. Add into this mix McCain and Palin's active solicitation for hatred and violence directed at Obama, and now Bush has control of $100 billion and Blackwater and the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team. Huh? I'm trying to be perceptive instead of paranoid, Bob writes. Mark Crispin Miller said we should be prepared for the regime to try to pull anything to keep power. If we talk about this stuff, we won't be blindsided by paralyzing surprise. But shock and awe may be coming home. The $100 billion that he's referring to, out of the $750 billion holdup that was engineered against the American taxpayer to bail out these capitalist pigs in Wall Street and the banking industry, $100 billion was earmarked strictly for executive use. It goes right into Bush's hands. You like that? So when you hear people talking about we kicked in $750 billion for the bailout, you have my permission to get in their face and call them a goddamn liar. Okay? $100 billion, and remind them of the $100 billion that went to Bush. I'll have to do this over two sections because I don't think I can squeeze it all in before the next break. But Tim Wise, you all know Tim Wise? He wrote this. For those who have seen the ugliness and heard the vitriol emanating from the mouths of persons attending McCain-Palin rallies this past week, what with their demands to kill Barack Obama, slurs that he's a terrorist and a traitor, and paranoid delusions about his crypto-Muslim designs in America, please know this. This is how fascism comes to an ostensible democracy. If it comes, and if those whose poisonous, unhinged verbiage has been so ubiquitous this week have any say over it, it surely will. If it comes, this is how it will happen. Not with tanks and jackbooted stormtroopers, but carried in the hearts of men and women dressed in comfortable shoes with baseball caps and what would Jesus do wristbands. It will be heralded by updos, designer glasses, you betcha folksiness, and a disdain for big words or hard consonants. If fascism comes, it will spring from the soil of middle America, from people known as values voters, but whose values are toxic. From simple folk whose simplicity, far from being admirable, is better labeled ignorance. From all-American types whose patriotism is a dagger pointed at the very heart of the national interest, for it so forsakes all the best principles upon which the Republic was founded, choosing instead to elevate and ratify the narrow-mindedness, the bigotry, and the intolerance that also marked our country's origins. If fascism comes, it will be ushered in by tailgaters at the big football games, by Joe Sixpack, who upon finishing his sixth beer and belching forth the stench of the mediocre life lived, will gladly announce its arrival, fascism's, so long as it comes with a steady supply of Pabst Blue Ribbon and hot dogs in the grill and giant foam hams with We're Number One finger, some Mardi Gras beads, and a good titty bar. If fascism comes, it will dress like a hockey mom or a NASCAR dad. It will believe Toby Keith to be an artist, Larry the Cable Guy to be a comic, and that the world was made in 6 literal days less than 6,000 years ago. If fascism comes, it will come from the small towns. The ones Sarah Palin, quoting a famous racist and Jew hater, the famous racist who said, the small towns grow good people, and which occasionally do, but which just as often grow provincial, isolated, fearful, and superstitious ones. If fascism comes, it will come from faux populism, from anti-immigrant hysteria, from persons who have more guns in their homes than books, or whose books, when they have them, are principally volumes of the Left Behind series, several different copies of the Bible, and a plethora of romance novels. If fascism comes, it will be welcomed lock, stock, and barrel by persons who pray at every meal to a god they visualize as white, whose son they also think was white, and who they believe is going to rapture them all into the sky upon the blowing of some heavenly trumpet, after which point all those who don't think as they think will be burned in an eternal lake of fire. Their vision and version of God is itself fascistic. To love a god who would do such a thing is to love an abusive, sadistic, and evil deity after all. So it should come as little surprise that their conception of the state would be equally authoritarian, or worse. If fascism comes, it will be at the behest of those who hold a contempt for what they call book learning, who prefer presidents who mispronounce basic words because they make them feel smarter, and who are looking for nothing so much as a commander-in-chief with whom they would enjoy having a beer or two or 12 at some backyard barbecue. If fascism comes, it will be interviewed lovingly on talk radio by hosts whose cerebral inadequacies are more than made up for by their bellicosity, their bombast, their willingness to shout down those with whom they cannot argue, for argument requires knowledge, and this is a commodity with which they have not even a passing familiarity. If fascism comes, it will come wrapped in red, white, and blue, carrying a crucifix and a shotgun, projecting its own sexual confusion and insecurity onto others, substituting volume for veracity and rage for reason, and landing on the New York Times bestseller list as a result. If fascism comes, it will have a pajama party at Ann Coulter's house, pop pills with Rush Limbaugh, and go gay bashing with Michael Savage all in the same weekend. And it will refuse to learn another language or get a passport, because doing either of those would make one cosmopolitan, which is just another word for faggot. If fascism comes, it will come because a lot of people who aren't like the folks I'm talking about here won't stand up to the ones who are. Because we're too busy, don't want to make waves, don't want to lose friends or alienate family. It will come, in other words, because those who know better are cowards, more concerned with getting along, making nice, and being liked than with telling the truth, calling out evil, and saving their country. If fascism comes, it will come because of the silence, and thus collaboration of those who think themselves good and certainly superior to the knuckle-draggers they can see on YouTube at the McCain rallies, but who in the end are no better and in some ways worse than they. After all, at least fascists stand up for what they believe in. They are telling us in no uncertain terms what kind of a United States they want and are willing to fight for, and maybe even to kill for. But many so-called progressives, many liberals, many of the so-called enlightened are doing nothing at all. And if fascism comes, it will come because those liberals thought voting for Barack Obama was all they needed to do. It will come because they allowed themselves to believe that politics is what a person does every 4 years, but not at work, and not in the neighborhood, and not at the dinner table. Meanwhile, know-nothings filled with hate, nurtured on racial and religious bigotry, and who have overdosed on the kind of hyper-nationalism that has always proved fatal to those places foolish or craven enough to allow it a foothold, they talk of their visions for America at every opportunity. They raise their kids on that sickness. They build churches whose very foundation is rooted in that cancerous rot. And they will think nothing of steamrolling those who get in their way.
Tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay-wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christian, right wing Republican, straight white American man.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Retribution.
comes the revolution. Time for retribution.
It's about 22 past the hour. All right, finishing up with Tim Wise. All right, he gives all the reasons if fascism comes, this is what it's going to look like, smell like, sound like. He then says, so when exactly do we fight back? When do we say enough? When do we stand up for our relative or friend who sends us the email about Obama being a Manchurian candidate? Stand up to our relative or friend who sends us the email about Obama being a Manchurian candidate or Al-Qaeda sympathizer? Or the one about the decency of Midwestern flood victims as opposed to those stranded after Katrina? Or about how God was punishing New Orleans because of its tolerance of homosexuality? And tell them what we think, namely that they're a bunch of racist, heterosexual loons whose friendship or familial connection we neither want nor intend to pursue unless they get help. When do we decide that we love our country and humanity too much to allow these people one more day of decent sleep, one more day of self-assured confidence in their craziness and the willingness of the rest of us to just take it? When do we decide that every irrational, geezoid, racist thing that comes from their mouths will be attacked, will be rebutted, until they can no longer take for granted the ability to say any of it in mixed company without being called out? Why, in the face of fascism, they would surely introduce, if given the chance, are we intent on being so nice? Why are we not more offended? Offended not merely at what such persons say about others, like Obama or Latino immigrants or whatever, but even about we who look like them. After all, their open exhortations of racism presupposes that they are speaking for us, and that this kind of brain-dead ventilation is something to which all white folks should aspire, as though it were virtually the essence of enlightenment. If fascism comes, it will come because we did not see in their actions a sufficient threat, or because we allowed ourselves to believe that it couldn't come, that our institutions were too strong, or people too good for that to happen. If it comes, it will come because we allowed ourselves to believe the rosy and optimistic version of America spun by Obama, without tempering that optimism with a clear-headed appraisal of the way that, sadly, a still huge number of Americans actually thinks. Because we allowed the vehicle of our hopes to outrun the headlights of truth. Because we convinced ourselves that we actually lived in the country of our aspirations rather than the nation we have at present. And if fascism doesn't come, if, rather, democracy does, it will come because good people said no. It will come because we saw in this moment the opportunity to demand the full measure of our humanity and to pour it forth upon the national soil. It will be because we understood that democracy isn't what you have, it's what you do. But if we are to issue that demand, if we are to stand straight and fulfill the potential we possess to do justice, we had best exercise that option quickly. For the opponents of justice are on the move. They are preparing to enter on the winds of our silence and indifference and our complacency. Let them find no quarter here. From Tim Wise. Just thought you might want to. We'll post this at our website when the program's over tonight, so you can read it at your leisure. Huh? All right, when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls, and we're going to start with Bruno when we come back, who is calling from Chicago. I'd take your call now, Bruno, but we have to break here in about 15 seconds. So do stick around. We have some more stuff to dump into the mix here as the night progresses. But we'll be happy to chat. All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
When the world is much brighter. Come on. If you're tired of people dying, come on.
If you're tired of the fighting, come on. No more wars, no more lying, come on. You want my people in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on,
let's go.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Well, Reg just sent me the official document from the Federal Register in its entirety, and apparently I didn't know this, did you? On September 23rd, the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security determined that there is a significant potential for a domestic emergency involving a heightened risk of attack with a specified biological agent, in this case, Bacillus anthracis. Pursuant to Section 564B of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, 21 U.S.C. 360BBB-3B, and on the basis of such determination, on October 1st, 2008, what is that, 2 weeks ago, Gabby? I declared an emergency justifying the authorization of the emergency use of doxycycline hyclate tablets, accompanied by emergency use information subject to the terms of any authorization issued under 21 U.S.C., blah, 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 blah. Dated October 1st, 2008, Michael Lovett, the Secretary, Department of Health and Human Services. We're under a state of emergency. The U.S. Postal Service has been directed to emergency information about how to get doxycycline hyclate tablets to, what the hell is going on? Why is this published? I don't understand this. I really don't. I don't know if publishing something in the Federal Register is a statement of intent, although this seems pretty clear not to be a statement of intent, but a statement of fact. On October 1st, 2008, I declared an emergency justifying the authorization of the emergency use of Cipro tablets. Now, the story that goes kind of, thanks, Reg. The story that goes with this, of course, is the other part, and that is the same kind of order was issued, not to the U.S. Postal Service, not to the public in general through an announcement on the Federal Register, I don't believe, but the same sort of order was issued right before the anthrax attacks in this country. When was that? September 18th, 2001? I know it was shortly after the bombing by the Saudis in New York. There was an order issued shortly after that bombing by the Saudis. And remember, all sorts of people in the upper echelons of government started taking Cipro, and then the anthrax attack occurred against Democratic leaders of the House and Senate, and against a tabloid newspaper publishing house in Florida. Of course, we all remember the attacks, but I'm trying to jog your memory like mine was jogged earlier this evening, that the same sort of order was issued then. So what does this mean? What does this mean now that Michael Levitt is declaring a state of emergency? Was that on the news tonight? Anybody see that? What's his name? Charlie Gibson talk about it? Who's the guy on NBC? Who's the anchor guy on NBC? Brian Williams. Did Brian Williams talk about it? Anybody talk about it? Huh? No? Well, then what does this mean? Does anybody know? Come on. Is something really, really, really weird about to happen? Oh, man. All right. Let's do some phone calls. Starting with Bruno in Chicago, who's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bruno.
Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, I am just fine. And, Mike, I've been listening to you a long time and first-time caller. And you'd been talking about fascism just a short while ago.
Right.
And I turned 61 this year, Mike. And truth be known, I had not ever intended to live this long. And but now that I have, I am just angry and livid, and just and I'm grateful for that, because I am angry at the loss of this little thing called democracy. I remember as a kid, when I was enjoying my misspent youth, that it was like it was pretty wonderful.
Right.
Life was pretty amazing. There were politicians that, on the surface, leastwise, appeared to me to be doing a good job. It was the days of John F. Kennedy and the days of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was this national consciousness, a dream that we were going to be going out here and somehow engaging the world and being able to change it for the better. There were those dark corners. We, as a people, as a country, never looked at what we were doing in Central and South America. And then as I would get older, and as I am here today and looking back in retrospect, have become so aware that people, or that companies such as Enron, various other corporations, learned how to steal and rape the financial landscape of any given country. Mm-hmm. As I've seen all of this and as I've read about it in Central and South America. And when Reagan was elected, I looked at my friends and I said, you know, and it started with the controllers, the air controllers. When mm-hmm. they were fired, it was like, guys, this is it. This is where it begins. The unions are going to die. The unions have died. Collective bargaining has died. Enron did what they did in Central and South America. Then they came here. When Bush got in office, what I was referring to was this process of they're going to third world this country. And that's exactly what they've done. They've turned America into a banana republic. They've gone in and they've raped the financial landscape. They privatized everything as much as they could. And right now I am witnessing Bush essentially stealing the White House china and taking the paint off the walls.
Yeah, it was the most massive case of grand theft, arguably, since the Catholic Church was established. The Catholic Church has stolen more than Jesus will allow. I think anyone who is in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church will be condemned instantly to hell when they die, including all the popes, for the theft that the Catholic Church has perpetrated. But the second greatest theft has been what you just described. It's incredible what, you know, a lot of people say, well, why would they do that, Mike? Or maybe they even say, why do they do that, Bruno? And the quick answer is simply because the whole idea was the reestablishment of a lord serf relationship. You know, the upper 1% controls everything, the bottom 99% controls nothing but works its ass off.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I talk to so many people during the course of any given day, and there are those times when you know, it's like, my God, this could all be depressing. And it's like, and it's just not anymore. I am angry. I get angry. And I am very grateful for that, because I will spend whatever time I have left on this good earth to do what I'm able to do, and to genuinely and seriously be active to stop these crazy people. They are crazy, but they're not stupid. They've subverted the law. This is a lawless group of individuals.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
On a daily basis, they have their hands in my pockets. They have their hands in the national treasury. $800 billion going back to the people that created this insanity.
Right. And that, and keep in mind, that $800 billion that you're referring to is only the tip of the iceberg. It is much, much deeper than that. It's my understanding that, in fact, about $1.3 trillion has been earmarked. And we haven't even gotten to the larger part of this financial hocus-pocus Ponzi scheme house of cards that still has to fall. And I'm talking about the derivatives market, the credit market. It's my understanding, and I'm having a hell of a time, like most economically deprived or economics deprived Americans, I'm having a hell of a time trying to understand all this. But it's my understanding that something like $56 trillion in credit derivatives are out there, if that's the right term, and they're made out of air. There's nothing there, and yet when that collapses, I don't know. I my head hurts. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Now, Mike sends an interesting email here. He says, remember during an election campaign a few years ago when Ross Perot said his children were covertly threatened and the media ridiculed him as paranoid? But was he? It torpedoed his campaign, Mike. Yeah, I was one of those who ridiculed Ross Perot. That was during the, 92 election. Yeah, I made a big joke. I said, the guy's crazy. He's out of his mind. Remember he said he got FBI reports that Arab terrorists, I think, were trying to kill him or were going to come onto his property during his daughter's marriage ceremony or something. Remember that? I forget what it was exactly he said, but yeah, I was among the pack who said he was out of his mind and ridiculed him. Back to your calls. Nicholas is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Nicholas, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'm from Miami.
Sure. Hi.
Let me get you off my speaker. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Mike, thank you for doing what you're doing for America on the radio. I've been listening to you for quite a while, and I've never called a radio show in my life before. But prior to trying to get your show, which comes on, I think, I believe, around 9 o'clock in Miami, there was a guy by the name of Mulder or something. He was just talking, rattling on for about 10 minutes, and then he came on.
Yeah.
I don't know where he appeared from. I know you mentioned that prior to you, I'm a small businessman. I lived in New York. I moved to Miami about 5 years ago. I was a news cameraman for about 22 years. And by the way, the man that you were talking about from NBC, I met him when I used to shoot local news in New York, and he used to work with CBS. Brian, Anyway.
Brian Williams,
yes. Nice guy. Mm-hmm. Well, at least he was when I met him when he was, doing local news.
Right.
In City Hall in New York. I started a small business here in Miami. It's an automated misting system that kills mosquitoes.
Okay.
And I can just tell you that this is an expensive system. Most of the people that I sold to were people who had homes over $500,000, and I lost 90% of my business.
Uh-huh.
These are people who, I guess they lived on credit or whatever it was, and they invested some of their money into brick construction, and they lost all their money, so I lost all my business.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I have left is, it's not much. Actually, you scared the hell out of me at the beginning of your monologue when you were saying that as you call her, which I think she is also, it's trying to get somebody to kill Obama. And I was so scared, I almost called the Secret Service. Believe it or not, but it is scary, and mm-hmm. they're telling the truth. And I was just wondering, are they doing anything about this? Are they increasing the security?
Well, I've been around long enough. I've lived in the United States all my life, and I have seen everybody from George Lincoln Rockwell to Bobby Kennedy to Martin Luther King Jr. to Medgar Evers to the attempt on George Wallace to Jack Kennedy to Dr. King, people politically assassinated over and over, Malcolm X over and over and over again. And when you've been in the United States as long as I have, that is all my life, when you have seen political assassinations and understand the rhetoric that usually precedes these kinds of political assassinations, you start to be able to simply add 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 4 is chaos. And the kinds of comments that are coming from the McCain-Palin crowd. I know a lot of people say, well, there could be just plants people put in there to shout terrorism. I don't think the woman that McCain snatched the microphone away from the other day who said, he's an Arab, I don't think she was a Karl Rove plant. And there have been, just so many. Whenever you hear someone scream, kill him, the rest of the audience, and they can't all be there, courtesy Karl Rove, the rest of the audience applauds and hoots and hollers and shrieks and stomps on the ground. So witnessing this via YouTube, via television, via all these videos that are out there, and also listening to the comments that people are making as they enter into a McCain-Palin rally. There's an 8-minute video out there on YouTube right now. I think we linked it to it the other night, or we linked to it the other night. And you listen to this stuff, and you see what people are saying. It is the sort of atmosphere that produces a crazed individual like Timothy McVeigh, who is otherwise not so crazed at all. I think Timothy McVeigh just moved through his life as calmly as anyone else, although he was associating with the real right-wing Christian nuts and the right-wing supremacy nuts and so on and so forth, until he finally just put it all together and decided that he was going to blow up the Murrah Federal Building. And he murdered 168 people, a large number of whom were innocent children. Not unlike what our military does in its attacks in Iraq, in Afghanistan, not unlike what the Israeli military does in Lebanon and the occupied territories, not unlike what the Palestinians do in Israeli cities and on buses, murder and mayhem. So when I hear this kind of stuff, and I see who's saying it, and who's condoning it, and who is pumping their audiences full of lies, deceit, and hate. Not just McCain and Palin, but every single filthy, goddamn right-wing talk show host in America is doing the same thing every single day. Then I come to a conclusion. They're trying to kill him. Past the hour. Back to your phone calls in just a second here. Got an email from Gordon in Oklahoma City who writes, Mike, I liked Christopher Hitchens' book, God Is Not Great. Enjoy his brilliant oratory. Appreciated the courage it took by submitting to being waterboarded and his correct conclusion that such action is in fact torture. Yet I found Hitchens' pro-war stance concerning the invasion and occupation of Iraq troubling. If McCain's strongest appeal is that of national security, at least among the pro-war cheerleaders, one would have expected Christopher Hitchens to be in the McCain camp. Not so. From the Salon article by Christopher Hitchens, and I'll link this at my site tonight. Quote, the most insulting thing that a politician can do is to compel you to ask yourself, what does he take me for? Precisely this question is provoked by the selection of Governor Sarah Palin. I wrote not long ago that it was not right to condescend to her because of her provincial roots or her piety, let alone her slight flirtatiousness, but really her conduct since then has been a national disgrace. It turns out that none of her early claims to political courage was founded in fact. And it further turns out that some of the untested rumors about her, her vindictiveness in local quarrels, her bizarre religious and political affiliations, were very well founded indeed. Moreover, given the nasty and lowly task of stirring up the whack job fringe of the party's right wing and of recycling patent falsehoods about Obama's position on Afghanistan, she has drawn upon the only talent that she apparently possesses. It therefore seems to me, Hitchens writes, that the Republican Party has invited not just defeat, but discredit this year, and that both its nominees for the highest office in the land should be decisively repudiated, along with any senators, congressmen, and governors who endorse them. End quote. Christopher Hitchens writing at Slate. We'll put the link up so you can read the whole article tonight. We'll put the link up tonight. You can read it at your leisure. Right? What else do I have here? Anything? Back to your phone calls. We have two open lines, by the way. The number is 800-989-1480. Kelly is calling from New Mexico, listening on Sirius. Hey, Kelly. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Unfortunately, I was wanting to give you a little confirmation on what you're talking about with the Palin tape message for Obama.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a few years ago, a friend of mine became a member of the Pentecostal Church, you know, the Assembly of God, same one that Palin's been involved with.
Uh-huh.
Not the same church, but, you know, the same
right,
religion.
Right.
And, you know, I've had to endure several years of just nonsense and just brainwashed idiocy. And a couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation, and it took like 20 minutes to go through this. But afterwards, you know, I was clearly disturbed. And I'll just paraphrase this conversation.
Okay.
The conversation, it went like this. Muslims are evil. Muslims are going to take over the world. The reason Muslims can take over the world is that they have lots of babies, and we have abortions instead of having babies. So abortions are evil. And
oh, God.
The abortions are like the Holocaust. and Hitler caused the Holocaust. And wouldn't it have been nice if somebody had killed Hitler before the Holocaust? And by the way, Obama's a Muslim, and he supports abortion.
Yeah.
And that came from his church.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard similar nonsensical lines of reasoning, if you can call it that, from other sources regarding people who attend these nests of insanity and ignorance that pass for fundamentalist churches. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, you know what it is.
Well, what did you do? What did you do when he told you that?
Well, when he first told me that it was over like a 20-minute thing, and I didn't even think about it. And later I started thinking about what he had actually told me, because he didn't even know what he was talking about. He's fairly naive. And he was just repeating what they said. And then it occurred to me that they're subtly trying to get someone to murder Obama. And it was obvious that they're intentionally trying to get somebody to murder Obama. And, yeah, I was considering calling the FBI, but, you know, I hadn't done it because I doubt if they would do anything, but...
No, they won't do a thing. They won't do a thing.
Yeah. It's intentional, though. They're actually trying to get somebody to do it. And, you know, it was one of the most, afterwards, it was one of the most disturbing things I ever heard.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm in a macabre sort of way, I'm glad you called in with that, Kelly, because I thought about this today. I thought, oh, come on, Malloy, are you really? Do you really believe that they're trying to get him murdered? And after about a 5-minute internal conversation, I came to my bottom line. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
They're trying to have him killed. They,
yeah.
And then they can shriek about how, the Democratic Party has led people to go nuts because of their policies. And,
right.
And just because, we have a difference of opinion with Barack Obama, some nutball assassinated him. That would be their line of defense, and
definitely.
Yeah, but they are inciting this, and
yeah,
it all comes under the umbrella of political speech or free speech. I listened to MSNBC and CNN both took live today some of the speechifying by McCain and Palin and Obama, and as I listened to Palin. It's still going on. I mean, she's still saying the lies. The one today, he wants to raise taxes on everybody. And, the truth is he wants to cut taxes on 95% of Americans. She is an evil, evil person. Which makes her perfect for the Christian fundamentalist right. Because they are neck deep in evil.
Oh, they just absolutely love her. You know, I get to hear all this, through this friend. So, they're just crazy about her. And she goes to the same church. She hears the same message that he did. So,
yeah.
And these
right.
people drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I hear you. Kelly, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Kathy is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Madison. Hey, Kathy. Ah!
Hey, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Say, you might think I'm a little crazy the way I connect dots, but thinking back, there was some legislation passed that gave George Bush the ability in any kind of a disaster or national emergency,
right.
another terror attack,
right.
to... suspend the Constitution,
yes,
call
yeah.
off the elections.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Yeah, and right. so, then I'm thinking about this story you were talking about with the anthrax.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm thinking, is that the final dot? Are we being led by that?
Is that
what it's going to be?
Yeah, I am so sick of being on edge, waiting for an invasion of Iran. Waiting for a domestic anthrax attack, waiting for an assassination attempt on a political candidate, waiting for John McCain to keel over with a stroke and Sarah Palin pick up the mantle. I am so sick, literally, I'm not speaking metaphorically here. I'm sick of waiting for this monstrous event to occur, whatever the monstrous event is, the suspension of the election, the theft once again of a presidential election because of these damnable machines. I'm just like a bundle of nerves. How about you, Kathy?
Yes, I have been a bundle of nerves myself. But we know something's going to happen. There are far too many of us that firmly believe that something's going to happen, and it they do have us, you know, dangling by a string. Just wait.
I hear you. Kathy, thanks. Got a break here. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be right back.
And fools like them never fall at all. They're tough as sin. Let nobody in. They turn and spin your wheel. And nobody wins. Coincidence and likely stars, they dog your trail like a pack of lies. They whine at night when the lights are out. You toss and turn, you pitch and roll. Disinformation, you spin it like a silkworm.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Randy writing from Seoul, Korea, writes, I remember when JFK was killed, there was a lot of people in Texas who were opposed to him. And the famous quote was from John Connolly's wife. She turned around in the limo and said, well, you can't say that Texans don't like you. And then he was shot. And don't forget when Strom Thurmond threatened Bill Clinton not to come to North Carolina because it might not be safe. Remember how everyone just laughed that off. But I am more worried that an elected McCain might be bumped off to put in the Christian right pit bull. Randy and Seoul. Yeah, I hear you. Back to your phone calls. Amy is calling from San Diego, listening on Sirius. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. Keep doing it, Anthony. Oh, I just wanted to say that I don't know if you heard Mike, I don't know what his first name is, Spoonemaker, who was talking about rigging the election.
Hey, let me put you on hold for a second. And our producer will get the call. We have to have a better connection than that. I don't know how to do that, but I can't. Got to have a little bit better connection. Nancy is calling from Minneapolis, listening on Sirius. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
When I hear about Palin seeming to be trying to start chaos and mayhem and all that stuff, we have 8 people here in the Twin Cities that are facing felony charges because they wanted to protest the Republican convention.
Uh-huh.
And their charges are conspiracy to commit riot in furtherance of terrorism. They were arrested even before the Republican convention was even started.
Right.
And there, it's possible that they'll end up in prison unless the, you know, courts back down. I mean, you know, just the hypocrisy of it, that Palin can get this media stage and say whatever she wants to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then these other people who didn't even get to protest are facing felony charges.
I know. I think it's clear that we are just hanging on the edge of the slip over into fascism. I mean that, Nancy. Corporate America was just able, through its agents in the Bush crime family, to take over $1 trillion out of our pockets because of their casino games in the financial industry. Police departments have become so thoroughly militarized that the Posse Comitatus Act is kind of a joke. I mean, some of these police departments would be able to go into downtown Baghdad and take on a whole contingent of insurgents, given the kind of equipment and armor that they all have now. So the arresting and detaining, jailing of people who are simply trying to exercise their First Amendment political rights is, I think, one more, you know, one more indication of this. I'm not sure what to do. Do you have any ideas? I mean, what should we do?
Well, I mean, even with they're calling the RNC 8, and people can find out about RNC8.org. But I think their legal fees are going to be huge. And they are asking for help with that. And like they said, if we can extinguish this, and to me it's like the White Rose Society, if we can help these people out, then maybe they'll back down. They have to know that they have a voice and we're backing them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to just continue.
Yeah. What's the website?
It's RNC8, and the number 8, .org.
Okay, RNC, numeral 8, .com?
.org.
.org. RNC, numeral 8, .org. Okay, let's, I'll link to that at my website. Let's see if people can respond. Again, I'm not sure what to do.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for checking in, Nancy. I wish I had all the answers, or just a few answers, you know, not for this program, but just for me. All right, we have to take a break here. We're going to take a break and then come back. Wait a minute. Who is this calling? Carl Childers is on the line. Oh, my God. We haven't heard from him for... since the Air America days. You all know who Carl Childers is. You don't? All right. Well, during the break, Google him. Carl Childers, C-H-I-L-D-E-R. He has a nickname. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
And they drag this black ass down the station and say, okay, streets are safe now. All your pretty white children can come out and see Spy Run. And they came out their houses and they looked around, but they didn't see no one. And my country, 'tis of they to take swings at each other on talk show TV. And why don't you just go ahead and turn off the sun? 'Cause we'll never live long enough to undo everything they've done.
Lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, this I have to tell you, this man has spent some time under the care of doctors, but let's put him on Sling Blade. Carl Childers is calling from Ohio. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
All right. You know I don't call unless I got something important, right?
I know.
Yep. I got a scoop, but I got a feeling they're going to steal this one, you know.
I understand that.
Well, anyhow, I got some, what leads me to believe it is I got a rough draft of McCain's inauguration speech here. Doesn't look finished, but I got a few lines from it.
You have it?
Uh-huh. I can't tell you how I got it.
I'm not even going to ask, Carl.
You want to hear some of it?
Yes, sir. I'd like to hear some of it. So.
Let me see. It's hard to read because he got it all scribbly. But it says, President Bush, distinguished guests, and my fellow prisoners. I'd like to begin by thanking my worthy opponents in this journey, Governor Huckabee, Governor Romney, Mayor Giuliani, Senators Biden, Clinton, Dodd, and I especially would like to thank that one. I'd also like to thank President Bush and Cheney. You've done a heck of a job. My fiends. I think he meant friends.
Yeah, I think so.
Although these are troubled times, I'd like to remind you it's not as tough as being locked in a 2-square-foot box like a gremlin. It took a maverick to escape from that box, and a maverick will get out of an economic mess. A mess brought to us by the likes of Freddie McMurray and Bernie Mac and them subliminal loans. We'll rebuild our Constitution by reinstating posse comatose and heinous corpses. And I will fight for the environment by encouraging the planting of birdseed that will grow into the joyous sounds of birdsong. Potted meat, French fries, more blades. Oh, wait, that's my shopping list.
That's your shopping list, yeah.
I guess that was all he got.
That's it?
Yeah, he can't work late at night. He got to go to bed early. So
He does, Carl. What was on your shopping list again?
I got potted meat, French fries, taters. That's what we call them.
And
a mower blade.
More blades. Yeah, I was afraid that's what you said. I'm not going to ask you how or where you got that, but it does sound like.
That's why I need more blades.
Yeah, I know. It does sound like John McCain. So.
Yeah, you're speaking of singing like a bird, Mike.
Yeah.
Something else. Maybe I ought to let you know, but about that guy who was on the boat.
Yeah.
I can give you a little hint.
You go ahead.
Who it was?
All right. Who was it?
I am coming to you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, then. You know I know where I've been anyhow.
Yeah, I do. I do. All right, Carl, how you feeling lately?
All right.
You ain't
too bad. I'm nervous about it, though.
Yeah, you are? You nervous about the election or nervous about something else?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I'm just afraid that would be
The election is something else, like you said.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah Palin, she's a wild one.
Isn't she?
More ways than one, I can tell you that.
I know. Well, you need to not watch the TV when she's on, Carl.
But she turns me, you know.
No, you need to not watch the TV. That's how you got in trouble the last time.
That's true.
You know, you need to be
careful. I just got to get with the band instead and play some music.
That's right. Just play some music, Carl, please. All right. Well, listen, it's good to hear from you. I thought maybe you had been, I don't want to say incarcerated, but I thought.
Not incarcerated.
No, I thought maybe you had under treatment again.
Not spent no time in no pine box either.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
All right, Dan, I'll let you get back to your show.
One last thing. Are you still working on the Rock the Vote campaign? Carl?
Why, what's going on?
I just wondered if you were still working on that.
Are there a campaign coming up?
That's all right. It's all right. It's okay. No. It's okay.
I've been over by the Mediterranean, the sea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have. Listen.
The coast.
Yeah, on the coast. Good to hear from you, Carl, okay?
All right, Dan.
All right.
You tell Candy and the kids, eh?
Yeah, I'll do that. All right.
All right, Dan.
Thanks, Carl. All right. Take care. Take care. I get a little nervous when Carl calls. Just a little. Last time I heard from him was during the 06 elections, I think. And he said he was conducting a Rock the Vote campaign, only he was using real rocks. So that's all I wanted to know, is if he was still doing that. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I've got no bone to pick with somebody who's gone through treatment and is back out. All right, back to your phone calls. Richard is calling from Phoenix, listening on Sirius. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you, Mike.
Yeah.
That was great. The thing that I wanted to just bring up was the fact the other day when I heard about this Acorn business in Indiana,
yeah,
and stuff,
yes,
with the 5,000 fake ballot or fake registrations and stuff.
Right.
You know, the thing that struck me right off of the bat, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it or say anything about it, but the thing that struck me right off of the bat was this just sounded just too much like a Republican dirty tricks operative operation.
Doesn't it?
You know, mm-hmm, what better way to get their little thing of, you know, the Democrats are screwing up the election and stuff like that,
sure,
and to infiltrate Acorn, make up 5,000 of these registration forms, turn them in, get the whole organization discredited, and be able to scream bloody murder when they lose the election that the Democrats are
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
doing all this. And
well,
I haven't.
I haven't mentioned that on the program because to me, Richard, it's almost a given. Anything ugly or evil or deliberately misleading or a lie that is injected like some kind of poison into our political system either comes from the right-wing talk show host or has its a point of origin with these political operatives at the bottom of the heap of which, or at the top of the heap, is Karl Rove. Karl Rove eventually is going to have, I think, basically the same horrible experience that Lee Atwater, who was Karl Rove's mentor, had. Lee Atwater, as you probably know, died a very hideous death of brain cancer, a brain tumor, and begged for forgiveness on his deathbed for all the poison that he had put into our political system. As a matter of fact, I think there's either a made-for-television movie, an HBO movie, or general-release theater movie coming out about Lee Atwater. But Rove is, I think, probably going to experience the same thing. He will develop some hideous disease that will give him time to reflect on the damage he's done, the poison he has put into our political system. And I think he will be crawling around the floor like Lee Atwater was, begging for forgiveness from the American people. And I would say to Karl Rove the same thing that I metaphorically said to Lee Atwater, and that is, go screw yourself. You know, prepare to meet your doom and your demons and your death, because just about over for you on this earthly coil. I hate these people. They turn my stomach. They're vile and disgusting and poisonous and evil. Evil. So it would not surprise me one bit to find out that this so-called Acorn scandal is a Rovian enterprise. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone.
Little
It is 10 before the hour, almost 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay. All of whom, to greater or lesser degrees, were instrumental in the program this evening. Also, a reminder to our Phoenix listeners, Phoenix, Arizona, you now have an alternative way to hear Nova M programming, 1190 AM KNUV, in addition to KPHX. So, as we mentioned earlier this week, welcome to 1190 AM KNUV. Mary writes, Mike, I was interested to hear your idea tonight that they, the McCain-Palin crowd, want to provoke someone to assassinate Barack Obama, as I started thinking the same thing this morning. I'm convinced that this is what they're hoping for. There's no other reason for them to goad the rally participants, as they already have their base firmly on their side. There's only one reason for their actions. Mary. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that is exactly the intent. You have to remember that McCain has been involved, to a lesser degree than Palin, but still involved in one of these extreme right-wing organizations, this World Democracy League or whatever it was called, set up by General John Singlob, that was instrumental in funding the counter-terrorists in Nicaragua, among other places. John Singlob was an absolute Nazi, an absolute uniformed, ranking American Nazi. And McCain was willing to associate with him. Sarah Palin, through the Alaska Independence Party, has equally displayed her contempt and disgust with America, through the United States of America, through her association and participation with this crazed, snake-handling right-wing church that she belongs to, where they lay on hands to protect her from witches, for Christ's sake. She has demonstrated also not only her psychopathology, but also her willingness to participate in a complete destruction of this country. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen a major political party in my lifetime put forward two such crazed individuals as McCain and Palin. This is absolutely insane. And regardless of what you see on television, you know, poor mainstream television is supposed to, I don't know why, there's no fairness doctrine anymore, I guess because they don't want to be screamed at, but they're supposed to present an equivalence as though there is an equivalence between what is going on at McCain rallies that are evil, vile, disgusting, garbage dumps of these sick individuals, and Obama rallies that are positive, straightforward, to the point, trying to find solutions to this hideous, hideous situation Republicans have got us into. And as a result of this attempt at this phony-ass equivalence, MSNBC, CNN, the rest of these networks, try to present these two candidates as though there is some moral or ethical or equivalent or an equivalence based on sanity. And there isn't. John McCain is a loon. Sarah Palin is equally as loony, but much more focused on what her objective is. And her objective is not to be Vice President of the United States. Absolutely not. Janine is calling from Vancouver, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Janine.
Hey, how are you tonight? You're on a roll. You're on a roll. I love it. Hey, you know, when you're talking about this business about assassination,
yeah,
and that was my exact thought, but I think that you being a smart person and a lot of intelligent people are giving them way more credit than they deserve in the brains department. First of all, John McCain has lost it, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
He's broke mentally. I mean, they broke him, and then he made a deal with the devil back in 2000 and 2004, dancing with the Bush.
Sure.
for the presidency, you know, you back off and we won't, you know, take you out and we'll let you run. And then Sarah, she just doesn't know what she's doing. I mean, she thinks she does, but, you know, that ignorance of not being conscious of your ignorance and your lack of experience and think that you really know how to do it can get you in a lot of trouble. And I think, you know, so-called average everyday people that work for a living, we know mm-hmm. the nuts and bolts of life. You know, things don't always go as planned, and sometimes we get a little, you know, thinking that we know how it works and get into trouble, and then you realize, hey, you know, that didn't work. I really don't know all there is, and that's humbling, mm-hmm. and I need to work together with other people, and that other people have a lot to share. And the other thing, too, that was pointed out was on the radio, I'm not sure if it was Tom Hartman, but somebody called in from Alaska, a lady who said, you know, in the religion, the church that they belong to, it's really patriarchal, and the men call the shots, and the sure. woman can't make any major decisions. Maybe you talked about it as well.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's a frightening thing. But most of all, I think those two are just being massively manipulated. And I don't think that they're intentionally. I think they just are just fools and are being manipulated. And yeah, there probably are some characters out there that you know, we already know they'll do anything. They will cut their own mother's throat and lie bleeding
yeah.
in the gutter.
They will. Well,
to get what they want.
The one thing I'm hoping for, Janine, is that eventually the McCain-Palin campaign sets itself on fire. And I think that's going to happen. Janine, thanks. I got to leave it there. We're flat out of time. And thanks for hanging out tonight. However you did that, we do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Oh, tomorrow night, debate night, right? Oh, God. Be here. We'll have some fun, I guess. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Keep it lit.